Pirate RC, and I'm here with John Andrasik, also known as Five for Fighting. How you doing, John?
Great, how are you?
Good, thanks. Picked up my kid from school today. Did you learn anything? Cause in the world today, you can't live in a castle far away. Now talk to me, come talk to me. You have a tour starting pretty soon.
Yeah, we're going to get back out there. Took the Christmas holidays off and got the band back together, so we're looking forward to it.
Cool, and so will you be touring with the same band you've used on past tours?
Well, you know, the reality is for whatever reason, the members seem to change with Five for Fighting because, for the most part, I write the songs and I'm kind of the entity, but I've had some amazing musicians play with me over the years. This time out, I'll have the same drummer that's been with me for a while, Randy Cook, who's amazing. Got a couple new guys, Greg Saran, who just got off the road with Goo Goo Dolls, that I've known forever and I've always wanted to play with. So it should be a great lineup. We got Chantal opening up for us, so I think people will enjoy the show.
Great. And do you enjoy touring? Do you enjoy getting out there and playing, especially for the new album now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you've heard this before, but you love the shows. You love the 2 hours on stage. The rest of it, you could take it or leave it. You know, the travel is pretty brutal. Those tour buses, even though for 15 years, I envied everybody in a tour bus, you don't get the greatest sleep on those things bouncing down the highway. But it's kind of all about why I do this in the first place, you know, to play my songs for people and to share that experience. And the further along I get in my career, the shows become more and more important to me, and kind of interacting with the audience and letting them be part of it and singing some of these new songs. So I really do look forward to it. I get a lot of joy out of it, and I think at the end of the day, hopefully I'll be doing this for a little while.
Cool. And as far as instruments you play piano primarily, but when you're on stage, do you play any other instruments during your shows?
Yeah, I play guitar a lot. You know, I think it's important. You know, a lot of people, I think, when they think of Five for Fighting, they most likely think of the ballads that you hear on the radio. But it is a rock band, and we've always been a rock band. So I think people are a little taken aback when they come to the shows. You know, I grew up on The Who and Queen and Billy Joel and Elton put on rock and roll shows back
right.
In the day. So I play guitar a lot. A lot of songs, I don't play anything. I kind of hop around. And there'll always be a few surprises at a Five for Fighting show.
Well, and just going to the rock and roll nature of your band, you actually do seem to enjoy the faster, more upbeat songs. I've noticed with your lyrics, they're pretty fun because people do most identify you with the ballads and with the slower songs that are quite serious, really. But I noticed, like, California Justice, for example, I think there are some political statements you're making in that one, but you're also just pointing out kind of some cool things about Southern California. Can you talk about that song at all?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, growing up here in L.A., with our criminal justice system from O.J. to Michael Jackson to Robert Blake, I was actually on the jury pool for the Robert Blake trial.
Are you serious?
Which was very surreal. Luckily, you know, that case went through five or six different juries before they even had a trial. And, of course, our celebrity justice system allowed Mr. Blake to have a nice life and golf and all the things O.J. does every day. So I wanted to write a song that kind of pointed out to me, at least, the ridiculous nature of some of these celebrity trials. At the same time, I wanted to talk about a drive I do every year that goes from L.A. to Lake Tahoe up to 395 through Lone Pine and Mammoth and take a little cut off at Carson City, but end up in Tahoe City, California, where I do a lot of riding. So the song talks about a lot of landmarks in California. I love taking my family up that drive. I've had a lot of fun ever since I was a kid. I was going up to Mammoth and Lone Pine and Bishop. So, you know, hopefully this song makes a little point, and hopefully there's some history there. And as you said, hopefully there's some fun along the way, because the lyrics are hopefully amusing, because I guess if you can't cry, you got to laugh at it. Took off in the Mustang for the 395, double in my Harry, took the left at Lone Pine. I powered up the top of Mount Whitney. They may not have a job, but juice, but heaven never get me while working on my tan. A line of black and whites dropped by a yellow jersey. Called Uncle Arnie, said, "What's going on?" He said, "New sheriff in town. Name's Lance Armstrong. Killed a man. I don't know what the fuss is. I'm just..."
fun just to hear you use double double, for example.
I got a shout out to the In-N-Out Burgers. You know,
yeah, for sure.
Driving from LA to San Diego, there's about five or six of them. So we always tend to stop by at about 12:30 on the way home from a gig, and I'm sure we'll do that next month when we play down there in San Diego with the 4th and B.
That's great. As far as your songs and just your songwriting, does the process tend to start with the music for you or lyrics, or is there even a definite process you go through?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think with songwriting, there really are no rules. When I first started writing, usually music came first, and I kind of fit the words to the melody. Later in my career, I'd say it's half and half. Sometimes I'll write a complete lyric. Like California Justice, frankly, was a good example of that. I pretty much wrote the complete lyric and fit the music to that. I thought the words were so important. And a lot of times songs start with a concept. And I think at the end of the day, the concept is the most crucial part to a song. 100 Years, for example, you know, the sentiment of that song, there's never a wish better than this, we've got 100 years to live. You know, to me, that was inspiration. The rest of it's just hard work. You know, you write 100 verses till you get five or six that you can live with. So I think concept's crucial. You have to have a point of view, at least as far as I'm concerned. I think what makes songs matter to people is that you have a point of view. They don't have to necessarily agree with it, but they can be touched emotionally by that. I think a lot of songs that tend to be disposable don't have that point of view or that sense of direction. So I think concept is crucial, and then the rest of it is luck and the stars aligning.
Well, that's great, and that makes me think of the song Two Lights, actually, on the album Two Lights, your most recent album. That song, would that be one where you'd consider it, you have a specific concept or story that you're trying to tell?
Yeah, that's very true. A lot of songs actually come from experience, and you're educated, and you try to relay that education or sentiment that you've learned. That song, as you said, came from a lunch I had with a father and a son, a Vietnam vet and his son, who was a young lieutenant going back to Iraq for his second tour at the time. And I was sitting across from the dad. I'd never met these gentlemen before, and talking to him a little bit. And I asked him how he was doing, knowing that his son was leaving that week for Iraq. And again, this is a guy who'd seen it all. He'd served a couple tours in Vietnam, big burly guy. And he looked at me and said, you know, John, it's really hard on his mom, which obviously I saw that it was hard on him too, naturally. And driving home that night, I kept thinking about the kind of dichotomy I saw in this man, which was, you know, fear, obvious fear that any of us would feel for a child or anybody we know going to that situation, but also immense pride that he had for his boy that, you know, is going to carry on the tradition that his father did fighting for our country. So I wanted to write a song that spoke to the family sacrifice. We hear a lot about supporting the troops, which is great. I correspond with many of our troops. I just got back from Gitmo and met a lot of great families and troops down there. But sometimes I think the families are forgotten a little bit, and that's natural because they're not front and center. So I wanted a song that spoke to that. So Two Lights is that song.
Tear out my heart, feed it to love. Oh, for this one wish I beg you this tonight. Show me no mercy, spare me my pride. Oh, I'm going for a drive. And if you find out he's coming home when I come round the corner, just leave me to lie.
As you said, sometimes your inspiration comes out in songs and things you learn. And, you know, that song is basically just trying to tell his story. A lot of songs on this new record, frankly, come from other sources besides me.
And in the past, though, would you say you were more autobiographical?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, frankly, when you're younger, it's about, you know, girls. It's about simpler things, you know. It's about relationships. It's about testosterone, you know. It's more about you. When you're young, it's a selfish life, and there's nothing wrong with that. When you get a little older, you get married, you have children, it's not so much about you. I mean, I say that knowing that I come from a very selfish profession, you know, when you're a recording act or whatever you want to call this thing. It is all about you, and it can become frankly, debilitating in a sense, because all you do is talk about yourself and promote yourself and brand yourself, and it's not the most healthy thing in the world. But when you have kids and you have a wife and you have a family, I think you start looking at the world through their eyes. I think you realize that it's not all about you, and hopefully, you know, that's reflected naturally in my songwriting. I think this record, so many songs are inspired by my family, my kids, the world they're going to grow up in. You know, literally, songs come out of their mouth. The song Road to Heaven, you know, came out of my son's mouth on the way to my grandmother's funeral. My son looked out the window and said, "Daddy, what if there was a road to heaven?" And I'm like, "That's a good one, Johnny."
Yeah, that and it is a good song.
If there was a road to heaven, that's what came to me today. Would there be traffic jams with diamond lanes, potholes filled up with rain? Would there be tolls still left? There was a road to heaven, made of gold or made out of clay. But the angels wave me up the hill, or in my mirror just fade away.
You have to look everywhere for songs. And sometimes they're right at your fingertips and you don't know they're there. And I Just Love You, another one of my favorite songs in this record, the chorus came out of my daughter's mouth. So again, I think I got two great songwriting partners here living in the house in first grade and kindergarten, and I think that reflects itself in my music.
Well, good for those guys too. And I think you are giving back though. I mean, you've started a website now, right? whatkindofworlddoyouwant.com.
Yeah, it's kind of a new thing. It's kind of based on our song World, that some folks have heard, and the song asks, what kind of world do you want? And obviously we live in interesting times, to say the least, in our country, culturally, politically. A lot of questions are being asked, a lot of people are angry, a lot of people have their points of view, and I wanted to kind of involve this song with that sentiment, and at the same time hopefully raise some money for some great causes.
What kind of world do you want?
I've noticed over the years, I've been fortunate enough to see people use my music in home movies and graduation ceremonies, weddings, you name it. And I thought, well, let's see how we can take that to the next level. So at whatkindofworlddoyouwant.com, people can upload their own films, basically speaking to anything, kind of expressing themselves in the world they'd like to see, the changes they'd like to see. It doesn't have to be to my music. It can be funny, it can be serious, it can be a rant, it can be anything you want. And if you go on the site, you'll see all these videos that people made, and anytime somebody watches a video and clicks through to the sponsors, we raise up to 50 cents for some great charities, including Save the Children, Save the Music. The Fisher House is a charity that provides housing for family members of our injured troops, charity for the firefighters and the families of the firefighters killed in 9/11. Autism Speaks is a great charity, and the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation, World is their theme song this year, so we're using them on this website too. So it's really cool to see the videos people make and raise a little money, and we'll see what it grows into.
And your songs, actually, they carry a lot of meaning, some of them, and people have, of course, put their own meanings. And I wonder, with Superman, I know you've been asked about this song a lot in the past, but pre-9/11, what did that song mean to you?
At its essence, to me, that song is just about our basic humanity, and in that it's a very simple song, a song I probably couldn't write today, but it just says, hey, look, you know, sometimes we all try to be superhuman in our lives, and we can't, and at the end of the day, no matter what we are innately human, and the song has been interpreted so many different ways, which is great, which is the nature of music. Obviously, I never could have imagined before 9/11 the context it would attain for some people. But I still think in its simplest form, you know, besides the only song that ever put my 9-month-old to sleep at night, I think it's just about our innate basic humanity, and I think that's why so many people relate to that, because we all find ourselves at times trying to be everything for everybody or trying to be superhuman. And I've been fortunate in my life to meet some people who truly are special, almost superhuman people, and they usually are the people that don't get the accolades, that you walk by every day, you wouldn't recognize their face. And I've learned a lot myself through that song and my experiences.
wish that I could cry. Fall upon my knees, find a way to lie about a home I'll never see. It may sound absurd,
have you been at all surprised by how people have embraced some of your songs and made them really, I mean, even you can talk about the website, whatkindofworlddoyouwant.com, and just how people have made them kind of a soundtrack for their lives?
Yeah, of course. I'm shocked every time I hear my song on the radio. You know, I'm one of those 20-year overnight success stories. You know, I worked at this since I was 13 years old. I was passed on by every record company. Nobody wanted these songs. Everybody thought they were too slow, too deep, blah, blah, blah. And I was, you know, it was funny when Superman actually came out, you know. I was just getting used to hearing my song on the radio when all of a sudden I found myself at Madison Square Garden at the Concert for New York. So I was a deer in the headlights. And I still kind of, you know, I don't take what I have for granted, you know. I feel very fortunate to, as a singer-songwriter, be able to practice my craft. And the nature of the music business is very strange. It's not necessarily that the cream rises to the top, frankly, especially in this day and age. There's songwriters who are much more talented than me who are not getting their chance to be heard. So I fully appreciate that I actually get to live this and go around and sing my songs and make a living at it. So I am, you know, I am shocked, and every time I get an email or a note or hear a story, it takes me back a little bit, because at the end of the day, it's still about the music. It's not so much about me. And the fact that people embrace some of these songs is, you know, is truly special. And I think I'll, especially the older I get, you know, it means more and more to me.
Well, and a lot of artists, it seems, have been starting their own labels. You're kind of seeing that across industries, actually, in entertainment, even in the film industry. Have you considered producing your own artists at some point?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I produced my last record, and it was so exhausting. I almost ended up in the hospital. Producing is a hard role, especially if you do it right. And I think for me, I have to balance my professional career with my family as well. I have a lot of celebrity friends who have been very successful in their enterprises, who sit me down and say, "Hey, look, you know, I didn't see my kids for 10 years," and you know, ask yourself if it's worth it. So. With the kids at a young age, I think it's important for me to be dad as well as singer-songwriter guy. So as much as I'd love to try a bunch of different hats on, I think for me, just writing songs and kind of being the focus of Five for Fighting and doing whatever we can with some of these charities is plenty of stuff to do, as well as spending more and more time with my kids.
If you weren't involved in music, what do you think you would have done? I know you were a math major in school.
Yeah. That's a very good question. I'd like to jump into that parallel universe and see, frankly, what I'd be doing. Who knows? I might be working for the family business here in L.A. You know, when I was struggling in the music business for so many years, I worked for my dad, and he basically allowed me to get a paycheck while I could go out and bang my head against all the doors. maybe working with him, maybe teaching, maybe something in the sciences. My dad... when I grew up, worked for JPL up there in Pasadena, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and I've always been intrigued by some of the astrophysics stuff. But who knows? I don't know. For me, the dream came true, and no looking back, I guess.
Well, no, and that's actually probably a better way to look at it than what if. What do you think is the coolest opportunity you've had because of your success in music?
Well, the coolest thing, you know, I mean, I could talk about all of, you know, some of the charity stuff and the people I've met, but for me, frankly, the Five for Fighting thing has been great, because it's allowed me to jump into my escape, my passion, which is sports. I don't think necessarily without the name of the band you'd see much of me on ESPN. I wouldn't be writing for Sports Illustrated like I do and attending a lot of the sporting events and being associated with so many great people and events. And TV shows, radio shows. So for me, you know, going on the Jim Rome shows of the world, playing the Daytona 500, being on Monday Night Football, all those things that I've got to do is truly a pleasure. It's so much fun for me, especially now that I can bring my son and my daughter and go to LA King hockey games and, meet the players. I got to do Luke Robitaille's retirement ceremony just last week.
Oh, nice.
And for me, to meet all my favorite Kings from the last 20 years, I was the groupie that night. So it's been a lot of fun to do that.
And so the Kings are definitely your hockey team then. That was one of my questions.
Yeah, the Kings are my team, I suffer with them. We've gone a lot together. They're struggling this year. But, you got to stick with your teams, and I think they got a decent future. So when it's good, it's good. When it's bad, it's bad. But I've grown up with those guys and had a lot of good memories, and I think they finally got their ducks in a row, and I think they're building for the future. So we'll see what happens, but I'll stick with my Kings as long as they stick with me.
That's how I am with the Dodgers growing up in L.A., same thing, and you have to stick with these teams. And you have
That's
to
true. I mean, it gets harder and harder, especially in baseball, because, as when I grew up, I'm older than you, but I still remember the days of the Dodgers of, Say, Lopes, Garvey, Bill Russell, Steve Yeager. You have a team that sticks together for 10 years. People aren't trading uniforms every year, and the highest bidder doesn't always win. Not everybody's a Yankee.
Right.
I think it's harder and harder to kind of build that loyalty to baseball teams especially. Though, I'm still a Laker guy. I'm a Dodger guy. I'm an Angel fan, a King fan, a UCLA, March Madness around the corner, so I'll be looking for my Bruins to go back to the final game. And I am a Southern California guy. And the nice thing, too, is because we don't have a pro football team, I can jump on the Chargers bandwagon every year and watch LaDainian Tomlinson show why he's the best running back to ever play the game.
Yeah, no, and it's fun now being in San Diego for myself, too. It's fun to watch the Chargers.
Oh, it's a wonderful team. I mean, obviously with the coaching situation, it's been kind of a mess, but I do think the building blocks are there for a continued Super Bowl contender for the next 5-10 years. And the great thing I like about LT as well is that he seems like a decent guy. And you hear so much negativity about sports these days, and to see somebody with so much class really makes you feel good about your team.
Definitely. And just with your name, Five for Fighting, I mean, that's a hockey term. Do you remember exactly why you chose that name? And what, I know you were at a game the night you chose that name.
Yeah, I'll tell you the true story. This is about, 10 years ago now, I'd signed my first record deal with EMI Records. And at that time, the president of the label came up to me and said, "Hey, John, the male singer-songwriter is the kiss of death, man. It's like, this is the age of boy bands and grunge music." And he said, "You have to have a band name." And my first suggestion, which luckily I didn't get dropped, was Marketing Ploy. Frankly, he had a sense of humor, so he took that in stride. And then my second suggestion was Five for Fighting, because I'd just gotten back from a King game. There was a big fight between Marty McSorley and Bob Probert, and I kind of just threw that out there. And they're like, "Great." And unfortunately, it's hard to pronounce. It doesn't reflect the music. But at the end of the day, I get a lot of free hockey tickets, so it works out for me.
That's perfect. It's awesome. Yes, I have two questions about your influences, your greatest musical influence and then your greatest non-musical influence.
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, it starts with the Beatles, Lennon and McCartney. I grew up on the Beatles. As a piano player, you got to talk about, Billy Joel and Elton John. Billy Joel was the first concert I ever went to. The classic singer-songwriters, Joni Mitchell, James Taylor, Paul Simon, all the storytellers, frankly. If I could write the worst line Leonard Cohen ever wrote, I could die happy. James Taylor, did I mention? And I was a rock guy, too, as I mentioned before. The Who and Led Zeppelin and The Police, U2, bands like that. The Beach Boys, Brian Wilson, to me, was such a master. So that's kind of what I grew up on. I had a moment of Journey love, Gary's voice, maybe there's a reason I sing up there too, but he had quite the voice. But I really come from kind of that 70s background, and at least that's a lot of what I listen to today. Tom Waits, I could go down the list. Besides music, I'd have to say my greatest influence is probably my dad, who's a really good guy, loves his kids, loves his family. Kind of someone who I could admire from afar because, the guy's never drunk, smoked, or said a curse word in his life, and to me that lasts me about 5 minutes. but he was a good guy, and he is a good guy, and he's tried to instill in a certain work ethic and hopefully a sense of obligation for giving back in me. And, he's a good grandpa as well.
Cool. We always ask for people to do like a pirate shout out, 'cause we're piratepods.com, like R or something, whatever you want to do.
Hey guys, Johnny Depp listens to piratepods.com.
She said,